Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk distribution made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. Coming up early next month, a free InvestTalk Wealth webinar. There's one emotional commodity that's in big supply these days. The way forward is even more unsure. A new political regime and an aging bull market, along with questions about economic growth, monetary policy, it all adds up to more questions than answers. So if you're looking for some light to remove the shadows, join Steve and Justin for How to Prosper in a Year of Change 2017. It's set for December 7th, 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. Pacific Time. The economic changes may be dramatic. How will you respond? Join Steve and Justin for this hour-long discussion on December 7th. It is free, but you do need to register online. Attendance is limited. Just do that on investtalk.com. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to InvestTalk. This is our Monday, November 21st, 2016 edition of InvestTalk, and I'd like to welcome all of our listeners, no matter where you're listening. You might be listening on InvestTalk.com, maybe you're a podcast listener, listening after hours, or maybe you're listening on terrestrial stations in California. Either way, we welcome all of you, and I hope to help you get the most out of this hour. And this hour, as always, is to really educate you and give you some perspective and fill in the gaps of knowledge that we all have. Even myself, there's things I don't know. There's things that I come across on, let's say, a weekly basis that, you know, I haven't even heard of, or, you know, I haven't investigated well enough and don't fully understand, or maybe I just learn new things about certain topics that I just, you know, thought I knew all about, right? But there's always new information that comes on board, whether it's a new president, right? That's one kind of new piece of information that you have to adjust your viewpoints for and your understanding of what lies ahead in the short to medium term future, and even sometimes long term future, right? Then there's new products that come on board. Think of all the annuities that have not annuities, sorry, the ETFs. I was reading about annuities, that's why. All the ETFs that are coming on board that are a little bit different, right? Hopefully, if all the basic stuff has kind of been picked over. But there's always new things to learn. Always new things to learn. So don't ever think that you can stop exploring and stop reading and stop educating yourself, because this is a constant endeavor that you need to dedicate time to on a very regular basis. Now, today we're going to ask the question, should the average investor listen to Warren Buffett? Is the average investor living in the same world? Now, clearly you don't have billions of dollars like Warren does, but are his investment lessons over time applicable to everybody? And can you execute on them? All right, so that's one of our main talking points today. We want to hear yours as well. And we'll take our first call here in just a moment. But what do you do when the market is sitting at an all-time high? If you're a value investor, maybe you're wary over overpriced equities. You got to focus on the fundamentals so that you don't chase after equities that are too richly valued. But you don't want to miss big moves either. So what's the test? How do you know if a stock is overpriced? That's something that we try to explore each and every day. And, you know, you can look at various factors. One's return on equity, return on investment capital. It's a measure of profitability. There's also earnings yield. That's kind of the inverse of the PE. There's free cash flow. There's payout ratio, if it's a dividend-paying stock. These are just a few metrics, okay? These are the basic metrics that we that a lot of people should be looking at. But there are more advanced metrics as well, which is something we're going to be discussing on our webinar coming up in just a few weeks. It's going to be on, I believe it's December 7th, if I'm not mistaken. I believe I schedule it for that day. It's Wednesday, right? Yeah. It's 2 weeks from this Wednesday, so about 16 days away. It's a little bit slimmed down version of the webinar, the wealth conference we had a couple weekends ago in San Jose, California, and this is going to be presented as a webinar for free. You can sign up on investtalk.com, and we're going to talk about the basic value investing metrics that you should look at, but we're also going to dig deeper into some more complex metrics. And when I say complex, I like to think of them as more telling. They take a little more mental brain power to hash out and conceptualize, but they give you a much better indication of whether a stock is undervalued or overvalued. And that's one of the couple slides I think we cover this topic. And it's all part of what we're talking about as the year of change of 2017, how to prosper in a year of change. That was what we are going to present on December 7th from 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. Pacific time. So if you do want to kind of get a good perspective on that, you know, don't hesitate to go to our website, go to the webinar section, and that will lead you to the go-to webinar address where you can register for free. So I think that's going to be a great one for everyone to tune into and learn about value investing, and also what do the political and economic changes that are going on right now, what do they mean for 2017? Okay, and how you should adjust your strategy. Now, do you have any questions about what measurements to look at for valuation? What about economic measurements? Anything. Any industry, any asset class, real estate, bonds, stocks, commodities, whatever it is, let's begin the Q&A session now. And I encourage everybody to get their call in sooner rather than later. I know we have 45 minutes, but it goes by quick, so try to call in sooner rather than later. And we can talk about any money questions that you might have. But first, let's go to our 24-hour listener line. You can always call this 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 888-99-CHART. It's our anytime number.
Hi, Steve and Justin. I had a question for you. Let's say that you purchase a certain amount of stocks, for round numbers, say 10 stocks in 2008 for $5, and then you purchase another 10 stocks this year for $20, and you're planning on selling half your shares this year, would you be exposed to capital gains because you did purchase a certain amount quite a while ago, or would it be based on the amount that you had bought this year? Thank you so much, and I hope this question isn't too confusing. Thank you so much. Have a good day.
Okay, I think I understand what she's saying. What she's saying is she bought, let's simplify it for her. Let's say she bought one stock for $10, one stock, 100 shares for $10, right? And then this year she bought that same stock for $20, another 100 shares, right? So her average price is $15 a share. But if she sells half of that today, what's her capital gains? Now you might say, well, it's $15, right? Is the cost basis selling it today for $20? That's $5 in gains. That's what you might think. But you're probably wrong, because there are certain settings, and this is on your brokerage account, and you want to talk to your broker to get clarification, or find the place in the settings section of the website that says how shares are sold. But usually it's first in, first out, meaning if you say you bought the shares in 2009 and this year, and then maybe a month later you sold half your shares, it's probably going to sell the 2009 shares, okay? So that means you'll have capital gains of from $10 to $20. So you're going to pay that $10 in capital gains. Okay. It's not 15 to 20 because your average might be 15. And you sold it for 20. Uh-uh. Your capital gains is the full $100. Now you can change the settings and you can say last in, first out. So the last shares you purchased, those are the ones you're selling. You know, that'll give you break even maybe. Right? If you bought it for 20, sold it for 20, that's break even. No capital gains. So you need to check with your broker, see how the settings are set up, talk to them about what the options that you have to sell those out. And you could possibly do a little bit of each, right? So say you sold 50 shares of the 2009 purchase and 50 shares of the purchase this year. And yes, your average is 15, and then now you have your capital gains there, and you know there's certain calculations. So I understand what you're kind of getting at, but you need to talk to your broker to make sure your settings are set correctly for what you want it to be. Right? So how's your 401k doing? You know, many of our clients and listeners are invested in their employer's 401k plan. And in the past, you know, it's been very difficult to provide timely information and suggestions on these types of accounts because, you know, you're limited to the investments within your plan. And each plan is unique. But we're excited to say that we have a new program. It's called My 401k. It changes all that. We believe this system can help meet a serious challenge for the average investor. It's how to make informed choices within the limits of their employer's 401k plan. It's difficult. I understand that. So if you want to find out more, just head over to investtalk.com. Click on the investments tab. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-42. Oh, BJ's gone. What happened, BJ? You called in, you were ready to ask your question, and then you hung up. Okay. All right, let's actually review the market today real quick. The Dow was up about 88 points, the S&P up 16, the NASDAQ up 47. Gold was, everything was kind of up all over the board, except for bonds. They were roughly flat. You know, the Trump optimism is still live and well. The Trump trade is still kind of there. The big question is it sustainable? You know, we're a couple weeks into it. I wouldn't say that it's quite sustainable yet. I think we need to get through the end of the month. And really, we need to get through the Italian referendum. Something people kind of been talking about. But, you know, we had Brexit, and now we have Trump. And, you know, we're in a populist environment. Populism is running wild. And if Italy, the Prime Minister Renzi in Italy, loses this referendum, the odds of him being replaced by somebody that is also populist is pretty high. Does that mean Italy leaves the EU just like Britain does? And is this, you know, is this a snowball effect that really breaks up the European Union? I think that's a big risk, and we'll see how the market kind of adjusts to the Italy, you know, Renzi losing the referendum and going to a vote. I think that's something that needs to be on people's minds because that could be a big disruptor to the markets if that that also passes. And I think it will. I think the referendum, I think he will fail the referendum and there will be new leaders within Italy. It's just a matter of who will that be. So the Trump trade is on for now, but, you know, will the optimism be met with the same policies that the optimism is derived from? You know, tax cuts, reduced regulation, and more domestic spending on infrastructure and the like. And I think it's not guaranteed. All those things are not guaranteed, maybe to the extent the market wants or believes, right? Are tax cuts going to really be as big as Trump wants? Is his infrastructure spending going to be as big as he wants, right? How much regulation is he going to roll back? None of these things are even close to set in stone. They haven't even begun to really put the ideas to the Senate or the House, you know, to Congress to see what pushback they have from those. So It'll be very interesting to see if this really pushes through this new highs in the market through December 4th, which is when the Italian referendum is. Now, this is Invest Talk. Remember, we're not all stocks and bonds. You may have questions like, should I buy or lease my next car? How much should I keep an emergency fund? A lot of questions. Give us a call at 888-99-CHART.
Hello, Steve. Hello, Justin. Raphael from Jersey. Calling about a stock I'd like you to take a quick look at. The stock is Drew Industries, DW. This is a trailer component company. Actually, they sell trailers themselves, too. And I'm looking at this stock because I like the growth rates. The PEG ratio was at 1.2, forward PE just over 17. I think the valuations are reasonable and the growth rates are really doing well. And I think there's limited competition in the space, really it's Drew and Thor Industries. Drew tends to grow a little faster, sometimes a lot faster. They're about half the size. And I wanted your opinion. And the thesis of why I'd like to get on these now is because I think with the election, a lot of money is going to be coming back home, and we might hit a super cycle in consumer spending, especially if this repatriation stuff happens. And also from a nationalistic standpoint, a lot of people that probably support Trump or conservative aligned probably are more into this type of activity than, say, Hillary supporters. So I'm seeing like everything falling in line here, and I wanted to get your opinion on that. Okay, thanks a lot. Have a great day.
Okay, this is Drew Industries, and this is a maker of recreational vehicles. It supplies a full line of components for the manufacturers of recreational vehicles and manufactured homes. It also provides buses, trailers used to haul boats, livestock, equipment, and other cargo. So it's certainly in kind of the outdoor toy space, I guess you could say, you know, boats and recreational vehicles, etc. So I think I like where he's coming from. I like what he's talking about. It does have decent value. Its operating earnings yield is about 7.4%. Do you know what operating earnings yield is? If you don't, that's one of the things we'll be talking about at the webinar coming up. Its cash from operations looks pretty strong. Its growth rate's pretty good. Revenue's up about 19% year over year. Earnings up 70% year over year. It looks like their margins have increased, which is certainly a good indicator of, you know, whether or not they're getting good operating leverage, and it looks like they are. Their net margins are now at an all-time high of 7.4%. That's pretty good. The return on investment capital is 21%. That's the highest it's ever been as well. So it looks like this company is kind of firing on all cylinders. Technically, you know, it's certainly rallied from a drop into the 200-day moving average or near the 200-day moving average just at the beginning of this month. It hit almost $80, and now it's at 100, back to its highs for the year. So it's I wouldn't say it's super cheap. I would say it's maybe modestly undervalued. I do like what he's saying with the fact that Trump supporters are going to be tend to be the people that are using their products a little bit more. So naturally, they're going to feel more optimistic about their futures. You know, I'm not trying to get political, but that's just how it's gonna probably work out. Just like Hillary supporters are probably going to feel less optimistic. And, you know, the industries that they tend to spend money on will probably be hit to some degree as well. So, and you see these swings all the time with presidential elections. So I like his rationale as well. Did just start a dividend. You know, it wasn't paying a dividend, and now it's paying 50 cents a share, which I like as well. Let me look at their debt, because I think that's important as well. Pretty modest debt as well. So I'm going to give it a thumbs up. It's a little overbought in the near term, but you know, it looks pretty good, and I would probably go with it. But make sure that you understand this is above average risk. It's cyclical. So if the Trump optimism about the economy doesn't materialize, I could easily see this one failing with the rest of the market. Okay. Now, should the average investor invest like Warren Buffett? Should you listen to Warren Buffett? You know, the Buffett theory is based on maximizing gains in an arena that you're comfortable with, in an area of the marketplace you understand the risks. And one of the other sides of the Buffett mentality is that he has billions of dollars to fall back on, right? If he makes a bad bet and things get cheaper, we can just buy more of it, right? Or he can just take over the business or bail them out like he did with GE back in the financial crisis. And he also has Geico. That's one of the things people don't realize is they're using other people's money to invest, right? They're using the premiums to invest, and that creates leverage and increased return over time. And so the big question is, how do you invest safely, and is investing like Warren Buffett safe? And the answer is no, it's not. It's not safe. It's risky. There's a lot of risk involved with the way he invests in cyclical companies generally. And, you know, if you go into a long-term economic slump, you know, his businesses will go right along with it. So how do you manage your investments in a manner that maybe is somewhat like Warren Buffett, but you're never going to have the advantages, all the advantages that Warren has? Okay, so after the break, we're going to talk about what those are and how you should think about diversifying your portfolio. Now, we're open to your money questions and comments at 888-99-CHART. We have a half hour left, and you can get through right now. I'm financial advisor and licensed realtor Justin Klein, and this is Invest Talk.
We thank you for subscribing. Take the stress test. This is a way to measure your comfort level when it comes to risk in your investment portfolio. It's an important foundation to build your strategy on. It's a 3-minute series of questions that you can answer online to determine your individual risk level. Just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab. You're listening to Invest Talk for Monday, November 21st. Searching for value is at the core of some very successful long-term investor strategies, such as Warren Buffett, Benjamin Graham, and David Dodd. Passive versus active investing. That's one of our talking points next time. Right now, 888-99-CHART is how to get to us from anywhere in the USA.
Hi, Steve. This is Dick from Sacramento. I've got you on a podcast. I'm just wondering on the fundamentals now. On your show, you always mention that the stock is overpriced. I'm trying to figure out, how do you look at something like that, that it's overpriced? I really cannot tell. But anyway, I would appreciate your information. I do enjoy your show. Thank you.
Well, that's the age-old question. There's never an exact answer for that, whether something is overpriced or underpriced. That's simply an opinion, to be honest with you. You know, we're value investors, and we look at various metrics to indicate to us whether something is overpriced or underpriced, and it depends on a lot of factors. And like I said early in the show, that's one thing we're going to be discussing at our webinar on December 7th is, what are those factors? Not just the basic numbers, but also more in-depth figures that give you a better sense of the true value of a company, how cheap it is, how well it's performing for its shareholders, etc. And those are very important. You know, we're talking about things like operating earnings yield, return on investing capital. We're talking about Altman Z-score. Do you know what that is? We're talking about financial leverage. Do you know what that is? How much debt is on the balance sheet? And how do you compare that with the amount of equity? And what is too much? What is too little? I guess there isn't too little debt, but some would argue there is, right? What is a cash dividend payout ratio? You know what that is? So these are all factors that go into deciding whether something is over or undervalued. Okay, so you know, the standard, you know, we've talked about it for a long time, an easy back of the envelope figure is what's its earnings growth for the next couple of years, and then multiply that by the earnings per share, and then that's the price target. Now that's extremely oversimplified. It's a good starting place, but it's not the end all be all holy grail of finding value of a company. And there is not one. So if you think you're going to find it, you're wrong. You're not going to find it. Now, anything investing is, it's really an educated guess. It's really what it is. Putting the odds in your favor. Okay. You know, a lot of people will say, oh, investing is gambling. Well, they think that because you buy something, it goes up or it goes down, right? A or B. And they think that's gambling. Well, they don't realize that the odds of it going up or down depend on what earnings are in relation to where it's trading today, what sales are, what the profitability is, the dividend, growth rate, the sector, trends, the liquidity in the marketplace, interest rate movements, currency movements, economic growth. I mean, I just listed, what, maybe 10 or so different factors? There's probably 100 different factors, if not more. So figuring out the value of a company is an art. It's not a science. And you have to come up with the metrics and the formulas that you feel reflect what you want in a company, what value you want to see, you see in a company. And that may be different than somebody else, because there isn't a perfect answer. There never will be. Now, in the wake of the Trump presidency, you've had a lot of market gyrations. Okay, and the biggest, most impactful one that I've seen is not the jump in the stock market over the last couple weeks, because that could easily be erased quickly, or it could keep going. I'm not going to sit here and tell you which way it's going to go, because honestly, I don't know exactly which way it's going to go. But the most impactful move has really been in the bond market. The bond markets don't tend to move at this speed that it has over the past couple of weeks. Yields have really skyrocketed, to be honest with you, mainly in Treasury yields. Before the election, we were at about 1.8% in the 10-year. Now we close today at 2.34. That's a big move. You know, 45 basis points or so is a big move. You might not think it is, but especially at these low levels, that's a pretty big move. Now, a lot are calling this the Trump tantrum. A few years ago, we had the taper tantrum back in 2013. And we're having a similar move, not quite at the magnitude yet of the taper tantrum, but it's certainly well on its way. So I think it's important to look back and say, what did the taper tantrum do? What were the effects on the overall economy, and how is it different today? Right now, the rise in yields, people will say it's because of optimism from the construction sector, because people think that Trump will implement a lot of infrastructure spending, and that will drive more economic growth here. Create inflation, etc. But that has caused the bond market to really sell off and interest rates and maybe mortgage rates to rise pretty dramatically. And the big question is, how will this affect home sales and home prices over the next few quarters? Now, so far, there's been about a 45 basis point rise in the 10-year Treasury, and the mortgage rate has gone from about 3.53% on November 16th to about 4.0 4.03 on Mortgage News Daily today. So it's about a 50 basis point rise in mortgage rates since that time. Now, this tends to hurt single-family home buyers and new home buyers the most. Now, if you assume a 20% down payment, the median monthly mortgage payment has gone up maybe about 15%, okay, in that time because of the rise in rates. So it's, but how does this compare to the taper tantrum? Well, the taper tantrum yields rose in the 10-year from 3.65 to 4.67, so about 1%, and it's been about half that so far. Now, in the aftermath of that rise in treasury rates, mortgage rates also rose, and new home sales dropped 19% from June to July. Okay, and that the taper tantrum really started or ended in May of that year. Resales fell 10% from July to February, and this brought down broker commissions, and it subtracted 92 basis points from GDP. And GDP that quarter was about in that year was 2.4% for 2014. So it was about a third, dragged about, down about a third percent of GDP. And this could easily affect this again. And it hurts first-time home buyers the most because they tend to put the least down. They tend to make the least amount of money. And so they're more sensitive to the change in mortgage rates. So where the mortgage rates stop, I think here and between here and about 4.25, I don't think it really has a huge drag on housing, but I think you start getting into the 4.5% rate mortgage rate area, and that's really going to affect the housing market and overall economic activity. Let's go to Nick in Hayward. How you doing, Nick?
Yeah, hi, Justin. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks
for making it. Appreciate
it. Yeah.
I wanted to listen to your take on preferred stock.
Mm-hmm.
I know, you know, there are different companies, and I know they come out at about $25,
mm-hmm.
and they sometimes go to 24, 23, 26,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes they pay 5 to 6%. I guess it's dividend,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think? I mean, is that something one should do or not do, or what? What do you think?
Well, that depends on what your goals are. The preferred stocks are, in the capital structure, they're between your common stock, which is what you think of as a, you know, an equity position that you go purchase, and a bond, right?
Yep.
So they're safer than equities, but they're not as safe as a bond. And most preferred shares are issued by financial companies, which, you know, certainly in rough times, economic times,
mm-hmm.
Recession, the credit quality and the risk to financial institutions tend to go up, right? And so
uh-huh.
those ones are going to be hit a lot. And not only that, but are you familiar with the term duration when it comes to bonds?
Bonds or preferred stocks?
Bonds.
Well, yeah, there's a call date for bonds. Yeah, I mean, there would be 10-year bond or 15-year bond, right?
Exactly. So in a bond, there's some sort of maturity date, right? And the longer that maturity date is, farther out that is,
uh-huh.
the more sensitive that is to interest rates, right?
Okay.
That's the general rule. Well, in a preferred stock, there really isn't a maturity date.
No.
Right? So really, the duration is very long.
Can they call it anytime?
They can. You know, everyone's structured a little bit different, but they can usually. They can call it anytime, but they don't need to. So they could
uh-huh.
sit there and just
uh-huh.
you know, pay the dividend and, you know, keep that on their books and their capital structure, and
uh-huh.
you know, keep paying your dividend. But if interest rates, say it's trade yielding 4-5%, but what if treasury rates go to 5%? all of a sudden that 5% on your preferred is not worth that much, and you're going to have big depreciation in the value of the preferred shares. Look at PFF as a good example. Okay, and PFF is an ETF of all preferred shares. And in the high in July, when interest rates kind of topped, this was at about a little over $40.25 a share. And now we're at $37.40 a share. Okay. So this went down about, what do you call that, 8% or so?
8%.
Yeah.
Probably about that.
Yeah, that's a pretty big drop. You know, you might make that up over a year, but if interest rates keep going up, this is going to drop even more. So you have big interest rate sensitivity, so understand that. And you also, you're tied to financial institutions, which, you know, they've been doing pretty well generally, but that doesn't reflect their common stock has done well, but their preferred stock clearly is not. So you're not really going to get upside to the potential earnings, and that's why, you know, everyone's expecting Dodd-Frank to be repealed. They're expecting interest rates to go up, and the yield curve has steepened, so that helps financial institutions. But if you're in preferred shares, you're not getting more of that, right? You're just getting your payout. That's it. So it's not really going to help those companies. That might make them a little safer. You might feel they are, but that's not going to help you. So, and not to say it's a bad thing, but you have to understand the risks of preferred shares, and there are numerous, and you need to make sure it's not a large part of your portfolio, unless you want to take a lot of interest rate risk and you're okay with being heavily tied to the financial sector.
So what I read from you is if the interest rates go up, the price of this preferred will go down.
Yes, exactly.
To maybe from 24 to 23 to 22 to 21, maybe. Who knows, right?
That's certainly possible. It just depends on how far interest rates go up, what the underlying yield is on that issue, and how safe the company is overall. So you got to look out for all those things. Thanks for the call, Nick.
Okay, sir. Thank you, sir.
No problem.
Thank you so much.
No problem. Now, we have an award-winning system that can help you determine your optimal level of risk, because it's very important to understand that. And once you take the quiz, it assigns you a risk number after just a short series of questions. It only takes a few minutes. I think everybody needs to do that because it doesn't take a lot of time. Okay. Then we can match up your portfolio. We can say, okay, your portfolio is taking X amount of risk, and you are comfortable taking Y amount of risk. And do those match up? I think that's very important for you to have a matching portfolio with your risk tolerance. Are you being too conservative? Maybe you're being too aggressive. Maybe you should take more risk. Maybe you should take less risk. What is your age? What is your when are you going to retire? So just give it a try. It's free. Just go to investtalk.com. Now we're going to go quickly to preview what's happening for the rest of the week. We have a holiday shortened week, and I think there's a couple big economic numbers that you should be watching out for. First is tomorrow, existing home sales. They dropped 2.2% in the third quarter, and the indications for October aren't super optimistic. Kind of flat is what's expected. And the potential for next year in housing is going to depend on whether young people and potential home buyers, new home buyers, are getting new jobs, and how much interest rates really rise, like I talk about. And then finally, on Wednesday, you'll see the University of Michigan final survey for November consumer sentiment. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So you get through. We have 5 minutes left, so if you're going to call, you probably want to pick up the phone. And we talked earlier about Warren Buffett. You know, he has a lot of tailwinds that help him make good investment returns. A, he has Geico, and he can leverage other people's money to invest. He has billions of dollars on his back, so he can bail in institutions like GE, and get huge. I think he got 10% preferred shared stock that they had to buy back at, you know, crazy higher prices than when he bought in. You know, he has billions of dollars to back him up if he makes a bad investment. He's diversified. And, you know, I think that's the biggest thing that you need to understand is to be diversified, but also take the appropriate amount of risk so that you don't panic in and out. Warren Buffett's very good at not panicking, right? He has a lot of different businesses, and he doesn't buy them right at the bottom. You know, he doesn't pick the bottom in any industry. You know, sometimes he does a good job, but generally, you know, he's bought plenty of stocks that either have gone down in value after he purchased them, and then he just bought more, and he held through because he was sure of the business. He understood the business that he was investing in. Now, some of you, preservation of capital is the top priority. That's really not Warren Buffett's goal, right? So you can't invest exactly like Warren Buffett. And in this environment, preservation of capital is very difficult to execute when you're trying to earn strong returns. Like the California Public Employees Retirement System, CalPERS, earned only 3% so far this year in the first 10 months. That's well short of their 7.5% annual target. Why? Because they need to preserve capital, but they also need to earn something. And in this environment, it's very difficult, right? And I see a lot of people chasing returns and going after focusing on one thing, income. And it's a sad state of affairs, really. And it's what the Fed has done to, and really central banks around the world, is backed the retiree into a corner along with themselves. And it makes it very difficult to find good returns with the appropriate amount of risks. And when I say, there's a reason I said risks. I didn't misspeak. There are always risks in every investment you can think of. And the hardest part is, what happens if inflation takes off? Think about all these people, and that's what you're seeing in the bond market right now, is inflation expectations are taking off. But so many people are invested in low-yielding, safe investments that are kind of longer-term because they're chasing yield and they need to go out longer-term, but inflation is going to eat up their investments. So you need to be aware of those drawbacks when you're chasing returns, and you need to figure out whether this investment matches your goals. And speaking of that, let's go to Goal in San Francisco. How you doing, Goal?
Hi, I have a question on my contribution towards my retirement fund.
Okay.
I'm 62, so I can do the catch-up.
Yep.
I'm 62, and I have an AGI of approximately $200,000.
Mm-hmm.
I have 10 months of the year, 2016, that I was self-employed,
mm-hmm.
and earning money and contributing towards the SEP IRA.
Mm-hmm.
The last 2 months of the year, I have a regular employment, and mm-hmm. I have a 401k. My question is what I can contribute towards each. Is there a limit to the total? Can I contribute in both, et cetera, et cetera? Looking for your guidance. Thank you.
No problem. Now, there are combined limits to this. This isn't a simple one. I actually haven't heard of this one, to be honest with you. Now, there are the maximum contribution to a SEP is about $54,000 or 25% of eligible compensation. So that's certainly what is eligible, depends on rules. I see no reason why you shouldn't be able to contribute to both, to be honest with you. I'm not sure. I really don't have an answer for you. I've never seen this situation. I can do some research. Call me at my office, or send me a message. Go to investtalk.com, click on the Contact Justin button, and they'll send an email to me, and I'll look into this further, because I've never had this question, and get back to you. Now, our time is up for this hour. Steve has a new checkup date. He'll be back in San Jose for individual retirement reviews on November 29th. That's a week from tomorrow. If you'd like to meet up with him for an hour, you can go to investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab, and then Portfolio Review. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein, executive vice president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. For Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP, we thank you for listening today. Let's meet up again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.